This is a Times Online podcast.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers! Yes, it's the 71 comeback special. That's right, after 2 weeks off, we're back with Bugle 71 for the week beginning Monday, the 27th of April, 2009, with me, Andy Zaltzman, dressed in my Elvis kit here in London. And in New York City, USA, it's John Oliver. Are you? That's an interesting concept, isn't it? The borderline virgin. Yeah. She was making all the plays, John. Yep. Yep, she has not been taught that, but she has certainly got the ability to get a smoothie out of a cup and onto her face and clothes. Oh, really? How's she getting on? Does she remember me? All right. All right, but that's the Jews for you. Right. Yeah, we are. Yeah, well, understandably. Sorry, no, that came out wrong. The understandably was supposed to go with the catty bit. Not that we've deserved it. Cut that bit out. Well, John, while you've been living it up with Joan Rivers, I've been having my kitchen done. And it currently does look a bit like Mike Tyson has been having a conversation with himself in there. Debris and devastation everywhere. So this is for the week beginning Monday, the 27th of April, 2009. And, John, it hardly seems like yesterday that Honduras was signing up to the old Buenos Aires copyright treaty. But, in fact, it is 95 years ago that happens. Crumbs. I'm getting old. I can remember when that treaty had only been signed for 77 years. And 64 years ago, John, Benito Mussolini, the 22-time Italian fascism champion, was on his way out of Italy for what he hoped would be a nice long holiday in Spain. 2 days in a summary execution later, him and his missus were hanging from meat hooks at a petrol station, part of a promotion by more than 40 litres of diesel and get a free dead fascist leader. Just goes to show, when you're leaving to go on holiday, make sure you're not being pursued by vengeful communist partisans who want vengeance over for the brutalities you perpetrated on them and others over the previous 2 decades. That's a piece of Bugle advice you won't be given by your travel agent. Joining us in the Bugle soundproof safe this week is His Royal Highness, the Duke of Edinburgh, who's just broken the world record for the longest ever-serving consort of a British monarch. 57 years and counting of consorting with the Queen for the big Greek, so he must be doing something right, the wily old sea dog. Otherwise he'd have been out. She could have any man she wants. And legally that is true. That was a law that Edward II brought in. That's right, it's a 14th century gay king joke. Kaslam! Anyway, we'll not be hearing from Prince Philip about what it's been like to have spent 57 years seeing people die for cover whenever you open your mouth. As always, some sections of the Bugle go straight in the bin. This week, the St. George's Day section. April the 23rd meant only one thing to most English people this year. Thursday. But it was more than that. It was St. George's Day, the patron saints of England and Greece and Ethiopia, Portugal, Lithuania, Beirut, Moscow, the Dutch town of Amersfoort, Boy Scouts, syphilis sufferers and sheep. Probably also the patron saint of burnt toast, lost socks, Don Henley, missed turnoffs, tickly coughs, spare pens, amateur radio enthusiasts, broken coat hangers, contrived sporting statistics, and people who think they might be Napoleon. So, busy boy, St. George, John, arguably spreading himself a little bit thin. He might be better off concentrating on England a bit more from now on. Maybe that's why this country's gone to the dogs. Yep. That's right. But he just doesn't make me feel special anymore, St George. So, and also, he's a slightly unlikely hero for the modern-day English, John. He was Turkish for a start, and gave all his money to the poor, proving that he was in favour of punitive high-rate taxation. So, not exactly a Daily Mail man. Also in the bin, a shouting section, how to shout for help from different locations. Up a tree, from the bottom of a disused quarry, from the baggage hold of an airliner, or from inside the lion enclosure at your local zoo or safari park. We all tell you the ideal volume, pitch, desperation levels and word audibility to aim for when you're in a tight spot, and a successful bit of shouting could make the difference between life and death. Also, how to differentiate between two different shouts. Beware, off-beam shouting can result in unpopularity. And for the first time, this week's Bugle is 100% waterproof, so it is now safe to listen to the Bugle while snorkelling, monsoon observing or dolphin impersonating. Or just the two noughts on the end of the 400. Then it's only one difference. And two noughts add up to noughts, John. Obama had turned over the Bush administration ruling that waterboarding legally did not constitute torture, but was in fact merely inquisitive horseplay, I believe is the legal definition. That ruling, of course, by the Bush regime split world opinion into the Bush regime and the world, essentially. This Khalid Sheikh Mohammed story does raise the age-old quandary from moral philosophy, John. Is it worse to waterboard one person 183 times or 183 people once each? I guess the logic being of waterboarding Khalid Sheikh Mohammed 183 times in a month is that if the fear of drowning didn't crack him, which it clearly didn't, the sight of his fingers going all wrinkly would have been just too much to bear. I'm not a huge fan of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, John, I have to say. I think he's just too much of a terrorist for my liking, by quite a large distance. But the thing with waterboarding 183 times, it's like anything, John. When it becomes routine, the magic has to wear off. You know, after the first 10 or 12 goes, he'd probably just start thinking, oh, great, a free shower. How much damage can this do? And in fact, would that make it okay under human rights legislation if you actually cleaned your terror suspect and washed his hair with a fruit-scented shampoo whilst waterboarding him? I don't know, call Janina if it bothers you, buglers. And I think also it must be the same for his torturers, John, or as they should probably be called, his physical quizmasters. Fingers on the buzzers. Sorry, buzzers on the fingers. Where's Bin Laden? So the novelty must have worn off. I guess by the end they were just making him lie on the board, holding a chocolate bar wrapper over his face and squirting him a couple of times with a hose. Anything to confess? No, sure. Okay, off you hop. See you again in two. I felt the Spanish Inquisition was more fun than this. Yeah, the former National Security Advisor, then Secretary of State, now, of course, Managing Director of the fast food chain specialising in Italian snacks topped with South American birds of prey, Condoleezza's Condor Pizzas. What, mate? She gave the CIA the green light, apparently. Also, there was a memo from Donald Rumsfeld, who whinged in this memo about why the use of stress positions like forced standing could not be made more difficult for the victims. He wrote, "I stand for 8 to 10 hours a day. Why is standing limited to 4 hours?" Now, the amount that he stood, firstly suggests that even his chair thought he was a total dick. But it's interesting. Interesting. It is interesting, though, that Rumsfeld viewed being forced to behave more like Donald Rumsfeld as a form of torture. It showed an unexpected level of self-awareness. And today, Khalid Sheikh, you're going to have to fail to make adequate long-term military plans and be strategically incompetent for 24 hours straight. Confess! Confess! Yeah, what? Sorry. And now the weather with Cindy. Well, I think it was, John. I mean, I've analysed this quite carefully. And I've looked at the hand angles, the degree of finger bend, the firmness of the squeeze, the vigour of palpation, the time span and oscillation of the shake, and I reckon you can read into it that it was definitely a sign of Obama caving into the deluded socialist rantings of a crazed despot, resigning America's status as a superpower and saying, there you go, Venezuela, we've had our chance, you have a go now. I've asked, John. I have asked, but he just did it at a fringe meeting at the UN. Oh, to be fair, he's got to wean himself off it, John. You know, when you've been addicted to something for 8 years, like Chavez has been to slagging Bush off, you've got to let it go slowly. Maybe he just tuned out. It's a long conference. That's got to be a record, isn't it? Bugle feature section now, and the budget. John, Wednesday was, as always, the most exciting day of the week. And this week, more than any other week, because it was budget day, and always the highlight of the financial year for me, John. Out came Chancellor Alistair Darling with his tatty old red briefcase, smiling the smile of a man who is about to break some very bad news to a country that already doesn't like him and everything he stands for. It was the kind of awkward smile you would expect to see on the face of a careless butcher who's just been asked by a concerned parent with a baby pig in her pram to check exactly what he made his sausages out of. The basic message of this budget is, you know how totally screwed everyone's been saying we are? Well, they don't know the half of it. some people had been saying that the green shoots of recovery were evident, but it turns out those green shoots had been made out of the purest urine, pissing all over the economy. So how does this budget affect the average bugler around the world, John? Well, if you buglers are all alcoholic fat cat businessmen and business ladies with a 40-a-day smoking habit and a big car with a leaky petrol tank, which we assume you all are, it's bad news. A new 50% tax ban for people earning more than 150 grand a year, raising concerns about people leaving the country because of this tax ban, John. And I guess the instinctive reaction to speculation that people are just going to up sticks and leave because of this increased tax is, well, right off then. And for any buglers affected by this, who are probably listening to this bugle by having it transcribed by a personal monk, then sung back to them by a squad of gold-plated choir boys, do let us know what you think. Also, I saw a businessman on telly, John, expressing concern that this new tax ban will merely lead to the well-off looking even harder for tax loopholes. The basic attitude being, I will pay more tax when my polo club fees are paid for by the state. So how can Britain economise, John? It looks like we've got a decade of austerity coming up. We're going to have to make big spending cuts, which is bad news given that people already have to pay for the right to park a hospital when they're having their kidneys taken out. John, for me, what we have to look at is outlawing small talk in the workplace. Because the average office worker spends around 45 minutes a day indulging in small talk. Cumulatively, pointless general chatter costs the economy billions of pounds a year, which could easily be ploughed back into schools, hospitals, or even better, skate parks. So this small talk prevention scheme would be simple to implement. Every employee should have to wear a badge detailing how they are from a range of regulation states of existence, such as great, fine thanks, so-so, and not so good. How their partner and family are, whether or not they had a good evening, weekend, holiday or operation, who they currently think is best at not being that bad at skating, dancing or singing on the television. And if they all wore this badge, John, this simple, cheap and time-saving device would, at a stroke, remove 85% of the nation's irrelevant conversations from the daily schedule. There you go. Economic problem solved. I pretty much did, actually. Still available in some bookshops if you look incredibly hard, usually on a very low shelf. All right, shall I pop in a copy of The Love Guru as well? Your emails now, and, well, this email came in from Australia, from a gentleman called Peter Wilson, who, in response to my comment that G20 was what an Australian would say when asked to estimate the number of words in the English language, Peter writes, subject to the Australian Dictionary, as a member of your diminishing Australian audience, ouch, may I present 20 words from our dictionary. F*** off, Zaltzman. Peter, I think he's got his message across there, John. The interesting thing, John, I had a classics tutor at university who was Australian, who was called Peter Wilson. Not in words, John. I mean, certainly after some of my essays that I presented him, he had a look on his face that suggested that was what he was thinking. I hope it's not from him. Well, I think he's probably got a fair point, John. So, Australia, I'm terribly, terribly sorry. Oh, sorry, I'll put that in terms you can understand. I'm f***ing sorry. And this comes from Larry Miller in Eugene, Oregon, picking up on something that was in last week's Easter egg edition about what kind of fruit Jesus would be, were he to be a fruit. And Larry writes, ask not what kind of fruit Jesus would be. Obviously, he would not be a fruit, but a vegetable. A cruciferous vegetable. Well done. Yeah, it has, yeah, it's all changed on the Bugle webpage. The blog, which I believe I've now been promising for around about 6 or 7 years. I've written the first one. I mean, it's short, and it's there. You know, it's there. Yeah. Bit like and Hitler, I guess. I mean, not everything that's short and there is necessarily a good thing, but the blog is a good thing. It's a great, great moment for humanity. Yeah, definitely. He was all that. You're probably starring in it these days, aren't you, John? Well, now we see where the chimpanzee's got a gun. Deliver it? Is that all? So, some fantastic stuff you've contributed to the websites, including Michael Hirsch, who appears to have made an underwear advert with my head on the body of David Beckham, which I have to say is the single most disturbing image that has ever burnt itself onto the insides of my retinas. He looks like he's got a tattoo of you on his arm. Yeah? Yeah. Well, he didn't really got along that well. Yeah, so you can see that on the rude slideshow that is on the Bugle website as compiled by Tom. Who I think, John, you know, we've done quite a successful job over the last 18 months of dragging Tom down to our level of juvenility. Just in time for him to become a father and role model. And we can now officially announce the competition winners for the Bugle T-shirts, as first mentioned. That must be a good couple of years ago now as well, to win the Bugle T-shirts. The winners are Liz Henley, who set up the Loyal Listener Message Board, Sam Grafton, the pilot of the penis-shaped helicopter, which you can also see on the Roots slideshow, and and Michael Hirsch, who put in the photo of me in David Beckham's pants. Honestly, I thought those pictures had been destroyed.
You're so, going red.
Well, it's a long time ago. It was a long time ago. He was young. We both needed the money. Do check out the websites, timesonline.co.uk/thebugle. And also keep your emails flooding in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. And more of them will be in the next edition of the blog at some point soon. By soon, I mean geologically soon. Sport now, and no time to tell you about the remarkable exploits of the Afghanistan cricket team. One of the great sporting stories of the year, so we'll look at that next week. But this Sunday, John, the London Marathon is back after an absence of a year. And as another 35,000 people put themselves through 26 miles of mental and physical hell to raise money for charity. And last year they raised £41 million between them. I think, John, what this shows is what a generous nation Britain is. But that in return for our money, we want to see a friend or relative suffer around 4 hours of pain. Will you give me £50 for Tanzanian AIDS victims? No. What if I run 26 miles? I'm listening. Dressed in a woolly mammoth outfit. We've got ourselves a deal. Let's hope it's a sunny day. I want my money's worth. But when you think about it, though, John, asking for sponsorship is really little more than emotional blackmail. You know, if you don't sponsor me to run the marathon, there's going to be no orphanage for little roadkill hedgehogs. Can you live with that on your conscience? To me, John, sponsorship is like protection money. And when I was a boy, I used to have to sponsor a kid in the playground not to beat the living shit out of me every day. No Paula Radcliffe this year, sadly, in the marathon. She broke her toe in Albuquerque. But we've all done it, haven't we? Well, the Bugle forecast this week. Well, I'm sure most people have noticed, John, that amongst you, me and Tom, since the start of the Bugle, you are the only one who has not impregnated someone. So I guess the forecast this week is... All right, okay. by the time the Bugle finishes, whenever that may be, will you have impregnated someone? Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just something about it just makes you inquisitive as to whether your balls work. But clearly that hasn't affected you in that way. She predated. She predated the Bugle. For me, it's more, do they still work? Does doing a podcast reduce your fertility? That was my experiment. Thanks. That's all from the Bugle this week. We'll be back next week with a review of Barack Obama's first 100 days as King of America. How much change has actually changed, and is there any hope left? Bye-bye, Buglers.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.